You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Afghanistan is a full-fledged horror show thanks to the Biden administration and their complete lack of planning, honesty. This is so terrible. What is happening there right now? These are interpreters who helped U.S. forces, and this is how the Taliban is treating them right now. And there's more. This is how the Taliban treat. We're not sure exactly what the offense is. We're told it might be theft, might be ordinary theft, tarring and feathering people. Meanwhile, the scene at the airport as women, their families desperately try to flee. Watch this. Did you hear that? The Taliban is coming for me, that woman screams. So this is obviously a catastrophe, and American prestige right now is in tatters. The Biden administration hemming and hawing, and they can't explain this away. They can't. This is the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin.
We intend to send forces outside of the airfield to collect up American citizens or Afghans. But we will continue to coordinate and deconflict with the Taliban. We make plans, as the chairman pointed out. As we did detailed planning throughout, and of course, we also did were in support of the state-led SIV applicant process.
They're nervous. They're hemming and hawing. They didn't do a good job. The reporters didn't do such a great job either. And General Mark Milley. Take a look at this, then we'll talk. He's definitely pointing his finger at President Biden.
President of the United States made a decision to withdraw U.S. forces from Afghanistan on April 14th. There was nothing that I or anyone else saw that indicated a collapse of this army and this government in 11 days. One of those contingencies is what we are executing right now. As I said before, there's plenty of time to do AERs and key lessons learned and to delve into these questions with great detail. But right now is not that time.
Actually, this is a great time. This is a very important time, and we probably need a change at the very, very top. Mixed messaging from the administration, go figure, right? Secretary Austin on what they can do for Americans in Kabul, Afghanistan, and can't do.
You're still saying you're focused on the airfield. These people can't get into the airfield.
Well, we're going to do everything we can to continue to try to deconflict and create passageways for them to get to the airfield. I don't have the capability to go out and extend operations currently into Kabul.
All right. Passageways to the airport. That is not happening. According to our government, the embassy in Afghanistan put out this statement. The United States government cannot ensure safe passage to the Hamid Karzai International Airport. All right. Some basics here that anyone really should have come to terms with. I mean, you don't have to be a general. You could be a sergeant, maybe even a private, to take care of some basics. And these are things that Donald Trump was talking about all along. Number one, when it comes to getting out of Afghanistan, get the civilians out first. Get the civilians out first. Doesn't that make sense? Number two on our list, the weapons. You can't let those weapons fall into the hands of the enemy. And also, our bases, our fortifications, you have to dismantle those. You have to. Now, here's Joe Biden, seasoned liar at his, this is it. This is Joe Biden's presidency. And of course, he would mislead at this time.
We were clear-eyed about the risks. We planned for every contingency, but I always promised the American people that I would be straight with you. The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated.
Every contingency. Well, this is a contingency they did not plan for. They did not plan for this contingency, did they? All kinds of people noticed Joe is not as clever as he thinks. And he was deceiving folks the other night as he accepted responsibility. The buck stops with him, but it's Donald Trump's fault and the Afghan military. And did they plan for every contingency? Of course not.
They prepared, quote unquote, for every contingency. That's a lie. That's a lie from the White House. Clearly, they did not prepare for this contingency.
This is beyond spin. This is beyond dishonesty. These are lies.
I feel like I watched a different speech than the rest of you guys. I was appalled. There was such a profound, bold-faced lie in that speech. The idea that we planned for every contingency.
Joe Biden told a bald-faced lie yesterday when he said they planned for every contingency. They obviously did not.
Those guys were great calling out the president, including one of those pundits I liked extra special. All right. We've been here before. We got out of Iraq. It wasn't as spectacularly ridiculous as what we're seeing now in Afghanistan, but the deal negotiated was a bad one, and it helped give rise to ISIS. This was a Barack Obama, Joe Biden deal, and they helped create ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq in Syria. He's used to losing, Obama, Biden, and there he is alone in whatever situation room that was at Camp David by himself. This is, I think this will be the defining image of the Biden administration. What do you think? And he reminds me so much these days of Jimmy Carter. He even looks like him a little bit, doesn't he? There's something about the two of these guys. Look, in a weird way, this is a perfect moment for Joe Biden because he's lying now. And he's lied throughout his career. Why would he stop now? I can't believe he got as far as he did. In 1987, the man was caught lying his face off nonstop. It should have ended his career in politics forever. Somehow it didn't. Watch this.
What law school did you attend, and where did you place in that class? And the other question is, could you quickly...
I think I probably have a much higher IQ than you do, I suspect. I went to law school on a full academic scholarship, the only one in my class to have a full academic scholarship. In the first year in law school, I decided I didn't want to be in law school and ended up in the bottom two-thirds of my class, and then decided I wanted to stay, went back to law school, and in fact ended up in the top half of my class. I won the international moot court competition. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only need 123 credits, and I'd be delighted to sit down and compare my IQ to yours if you'd like, Frank.
Look at how smug he is there. Everything he just said, just about everything he just said, is a lie. And back then, the fake news wasn't so fake. They weren't afraid to call out a Democrat.
Biden now concedes he did not graduate in the top half of his law school class, that he does not have 3 degrees from college, and that he was not named outstanding political science student in college.
Newsweek says Biden actually went to school on a half scholarship, ended up near the bottom of his class, and won only 1 degree, not 3.
Joe Biden ranked 76th in a class of 85 at the University of Syracuse Law School. I mean, this guy comes off this whole thing as a flyweight.
Now Biden says Newsweek is right. His memory had failed him.
Do we just expect a guy like this to stop lying? He's already a United States senator. He's 47 years old. I mean, he's the same guy, the same deceptive guy. And I believe, although I can't prove, to be fair here, I can't prove, but I don't think Joe Biden had these conversations. But he said he did. And with overseas leaders wondering about the future of America if Joe Biden is no longer with us.
I made it known that America's back. And know what they say? The comment I hear most of all from them? So they say, we see America's back, but for how long? But for how long? And I just got back from Europe meeting with heads of state. One said to me, I said, America's back. And he said, for how long? When I went over, I said, with those seven leaders, I said, we're back. And the response was, for how long? For how long?
If they said that, they were playing games with Joe. Yes, but for how long, Joe? How long? Well, I actually have an answer, Joe. I did a little math from your inauguration to when you totally blew it in Afghanistan, 6 months and 27 days. There's your answer, Joe Biden. We'll be right back with the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump. The 45th president of the United States joins us, President Donald J. Trump. Welcome back, sir, and thank you for being with us. How are you?
Well, thank you very much, Greg, and congratulations on your really successful show.
Thank
you. I'm not surprised. I've known you a long time, but I'll tell you, great job and great numbers and everything. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, sir. So, listen, when you announced for president, you said that losses like this, like what we're seeing now, one of the reasons why you ran for president, but this is far bigger than anything I can remember. What are your thoughts this evening?
Well, it's inconceivable that anybody could be so incompetent, stupid, use any word you want to use, to imagine that you take out your military before you take out your U.S. citizens and civilians and others that maybe helped us. To even think of that is not, it's not something that can be believed. So we leave and we have all our people. Now we're sending soldiers back to get our people out, and you're going to find a very tough opponent. I mean, these are great fighters. They've been fighting for 2,000 years. That's what they do, is they fight. You do other things, Greg, okay? You're not going to a Broadway show. You like doing other things. They fight. That's all they do. And we send our soldiers back. I think our soldiers are in danger. But it's there's never been anything so poorly handled. We used to talk about the southern border. There's, you know, we had the southern border the best it's ever been. Now it's the worst it's ever been. But this is blowing it away.
So, Mr. President, I want to show you a picture. I'm actually showing the viewers a picture right now of Joe Biden alone at that conference table in Camp David. There's something almost sad about this picture. Look, you know the setup at Camp David. You know what it's like, obviously, to be commander in chief. This does not seem like an appropriate way to handle a crisis. In the middle of it, he's alone. Just tell us a little bit about that setup that he has there. Is this inadequate? It looks that way to me.
So it's a big boardroom, and it's an incredible room, as Camp David is incredible. It's just an unbelievable place. And it's not a room you sit in alone. It's a room that's meant to have many people. You see there are many chairs. And to be sitting there by yourself alone is unusual. I think it was just a setup picture to try and show that he's working, and he's not working. And more importantly than not working, their thought process is wrong, the whole group of them. They don't know what they're doing. And whether you think in terms of Dunkirk or whether you think in terms of so many other bad thoughts, you know, we have thousands of potential hostages sitting there. Our military left, and now we're trying to get our military back there. And you know what we were doing, and I think you know this very well, we had it set up really well. I spoke with the heads of the Taliban. I had very, very tough conversations. They knew they'd be held to pay if anything happened like this. And by the way, who could even think this a thing like this could happen? But they knew they'd be held to pay, and it would start right at their village where they all lived, where they lived very happily. And we had this worked out. It was going to be great. But the last thing that was coming out was our military. And we were going to take all the civilians. Second was going to be all of our equipment. We're taking it back. We don't want to. They now have Black Hawks. They have army tanks that are the best in the world. Well, they're going to be used by Russia to analyze them so they can be copied, and China so they can be copied. Guaranteed. They'll be sent all over to enemies to, you know, so they can make cheaper versions of them, and they'll be copied. It's disgraceful. So all of the equipment was coming out. I remember one of the generals telling me, one of the generals that's on television a lot that I see right now saying, sir, it's cheaper to leave it. I said, if you think that, general, then you're incompetent. You know, millions of dollars for tanks and millions of dollars for Humvees that are armor-plated, and now they have the Taliban flag on it. It's a horrible thing. But all this stuff was going to come out, and then I probably would have bombed the forts. I would have bombed them too, so that whoever it is going to occupy them, they're going to be sitting on rubble.
Well,
and
for
that
those...
was our plan, and it would have been very successful. But unfortunately, they didn't do it that way.
This is something that's been a priority for you. You know, you had this negotiated agreement with the Taliban. It did not mention weapons destruction, but that has been something on your radar for a long time. In fact, the day you declared for president, you spoke about our weapons left in Iraq. I want you to listen to this, please.
And every time we give Iraq equipment, the first time a bullet goes off in the air, they leave it. Last week, I read 2,300 Humvees, these are big vehicles, were left behind for the enemy. 2,000, you would say maybe two, maybe four. 2,300 sophisticated vehicles they ran, and the enemy took them.
And essentially the same thing is happening right now. I want to show you that picture that we all saw with the hundreds of people on that big cargo jet. I think it's a C-17. All kinds of people jammed in there. Now, you pointed out you would actually prefer to see Americans on that plane. What was your plan for those who did help us, the interpreters, those who worked on the base? What was going to happen to those people in a Trump administration?
Well, we would take care of them. We would try. But it's a very big problem because we have so many of them. I mean, we're not making guarantees to people. If you look, I want to get the America. Look, I'm America first, okay? And so are you. I want America first, meaning Americans come out first. But, you know, we paid them a lot of money. You know, everyone's giving them credit for being brave and all of the things. Well, we were paying them a lot of money, just like we were paying the soldiers, you know, the Afghans, a lot of money to be soldiers, among the highest paid soldiers in the world. And I remember Mattis used to come and say to me, sir, they're fighting for their country. And I kept thinking, I wonder why they're doing that, because, you know, they're fighting their own people. I said, well, that's good. And then I started thinking about it, and I said to somebody, go out and find for me, how much are we paying for them? And it's billions of dollars a year, paid for by the United States taxpayer. Now, once we stop paying them, once we said we're leaving, it stops paying, they quit. They left. So they weren't really fighting for their country. And I've been saying that for a long time. And I also said that, Karzai, I said that your head person is a crook. And he dealt with the United States Senate. And that was his greatest strength, was the U.S. Congress. The senators and congressmen, he had relationships. And every time I'd do something, I'd get calls from everybody. Oh, we have to... He was bad news, Ghani. He was bad news, this guy. He was a con man, and now I guess they just caught him leaving with a lot of money. But I said, he is not a leader. I said, he will be out before the last soldiers are out. He will leave, and that's exactly what happened. I called it all the way. I had statements put out, I think 5 or 6 years ago, that as soon as we leave, they'll stop fighting. That's why I wanted to take all the equipment, because I knew that the enemy would grab the equipment. And that's exactly what they did. They grabbed the greatest equipment, that they grabbed the greatest stuff anywhere in the world, and now they'll be giving it to other nations so they can cheaply copy it. It's so horrible.
At the Pentagon this afternoon, I saw General Milley and Secretary Austin. And I want to ask you about General Milley. Of course, I was taken aback big time when he apologized for that walk across the street with you. The apology seemed very inappropriate. Now I'm reading some of these books from some journalists down there in Washington, D.C. There are a lot of problems in these books. But one thing that comes through, General Milley may have been actively working to sabotage your administration. It comes through, and he was not working very well. He may have been colluding with the Democrats. Did you have that sense?
So he was recommended by people that I didn't think much of. And he was also recommended by a couple of people and, you know, that I thought were just absolutely terrible. And I decided, you know, and Mattis, I call him the world's most overrated general. Mattis hated him, hated him. I figured, based on the fact that I thought very little of Mattis, we did a great job without Mattis. Once I got rid of Mattis, we took over, we knocked out ISIS and everything else. I said, if he hates Billy that much, maybe the guy will be all right. That's the one that a lot of people were recommending, but a lot of people didn't like him at the time. And I found him to be very average or less than average. I will say this. When he walked with the President of the United States to a church that had been burned down almost, if they didn't have the fireproofing, which was just put up, it was literally so amazing because that church was built at the same time as the White House. They went up together. And when he went and took that walk, and then he apologized because the radical left started getting on him, I realized I had a loser, and I paid very little respect to him. He wasn't very good. So I am not a fan of his. I realized somewhere during the period, and he was highly recommended by, not highly, he was recommended sort of the next guy in there. But in retrospect, I would not have made that decision again. And look at what he's done. He took the military out before he got the civilians out and before he got U.S. citizens out. So that would show gross incompetence. And I don't know your Secretary of Defense, but certainly based on what we're seeing right here, this is the single greatest embarrassment, in my opinion, militarily and otherwise, psychologically, certainly. This is the single greatest embarrassment I've ever seen.
You know, it's amazing.
I don't think we've ever had a greater embarrassment in our country's history.
I can't think of anything. I really can't. I mean, the fiasco in the desert when we try to get the hostages was bad, but this tops that. The media.
Well, they potentially, Greg, if you think about it, they potentially have 40,000 hostages. You know, with Jimmy Carter, it was a small number. That was a terrible thing, but that was a small number of people. They have. But, you know, I've heard numbers as high as 40,000, maybe 10,000, but I've heard numbers as high as 40,000. And that doesn't include Afghans that helped us, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll have to see what happens. Now, I know the leadership because, you know, I got criticized because they said he shouldn't be speaking to the head of Taliban. Well, who am I going to speak to? That's the right guy. And I let him know, don't do this, don't do that. I got Abdul. I said, how are we doing, Abdul? We had a very good conversation, but I let him know very strongly what would happen. This would have never happened if the election wasn't rigged. And there are consequences to a rigged election. This would have never happened. The southern border was the strongest it ever was, and now it's the worst. I mean, people are pouring in, including people from the Middle East. They're pouring in. Prisons are being emptied from other countries and being dumped into the United States. And it was a rigged election that caused this problem.
President Trump, if you don't mind, let me pause it there. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back with you, Mr. President, and you at home in just a couple of moments.
Hey, I'm Rob Carson, host of the Newsmax Daily Podcast. Tired of boring traditional news updates? How about one with a conservative point of view and it's actually funny? You can subscribe for free on the Apple Podcast app, and it downloads directly to your smartphone so you can listen while driving, to work, riding a bike, at the gym, or even while lobster fishing off the East Coast. Subscribe today with the Apple Podcast app or go to NewsmaxTV.com/podcasts for other platforms. Something's coming. I
hear it calling. And we're back with President Trump. Thanks again for being here, sir. Let me ask you this. As I read these books about your presidency, and a lot of them are full of lies and full of omissions, but a couple of things come through. The deep state seemed to be working against you, very much so, and the entire media establishment.
I would say so, yes.
Do you think they purposely slowed research on therapeutics or approving therapeutics and the vaccine to delay it until after the election?
Well, I can tell you this. Nobody treated the FDA rougher than I did. I'm very proud of the vaccine. I've taken it. You're probably taken it. But I'm very proud of it. I think we could have another situation with the Spanish flu 1917 where up to 100 million people were killed. So I'm very proud of it. When it came out, It was right after the election. And when it came out, it was a tremendous story. And they said I would have won the election. Well, I won the election anyway, Greg, by a lot. But they said I would have won the election. But I think what would have happened, if it actually did come out a few days before the election, the media, the fake news, would have played it down. It would have been a small story. And everybody knew it was right there. We knew it. You know, one of the things I did, not only the vaccine, but I bought billions of dollars worth of it, because otherwise it would have taken November, December. We wouldn't have any shots yet. And what I did is, before we knew it worked, we had good signals, but before, I bought billions and billions of dollars of the vaccine, and that's why we've been taking it for a long time now. And without that, we really would have a big problem. And I do believe people have to have their freedoms and all of that, but, you know, I'd love to see him take the vaccine. I think Biden's hurt it very badly because they don't trust him. A lot of people do not trust him. When he said pause on Johnson & Johnson, people don't view Johnson & Johnson. They say the vaccine. And I think that scared a lot of people.
You know what's wild? Right now, Mr. President, you are off social media. The Taliban is on social media.
Yeah.
They have a valid, active Twitter account. These horrible, hateful people who gave solace and refuge to Al-Qaeda, and you are not on social media. It is...
Well, I have Save America, and we put it out, and we're doing great with it, and people are picking it up, and people hear my voice. That's why I'm speaking to you, and you're a very important source. I will tell you that you are a very important voice in this country, and you've done an incredible job. I'm just, you know, because I knew you when you were local Channel 5, right? Local Channel 5. I watched you in the morning with Rosanna. But you've done a great job. And, you know, being on, you know, speaking to you now, it's a lot of people. Speaking to other shows that do a very good job, it's people. We have a big voice. But to Save America, we issue releases, and it's under Save America, and they get picked up. But it's disgraceful when you think that you have killers and muggers and dictators and horrible dictators and countries, and they're all on. But the president of the United States, who had hundreds of millions of people, by the way, he gets taken off. And as you know, we have a major lawsuit going. We filed it in Florida, and I think it's going to be very successful.
Mr. President, I want to play you something. I want to play you something from about 40 years ago, an interview you did with Rona Barrett back when you lived, I think, at 801 Fifth Avenue or so. Let's go ahead and roll it, please.
For some people, the ultimate goal in life has been becoming the president of the United States. Would you like to be the president of the United States?
I really don't believe I would, Rona, but I would like to see somebody as the president who could do the job, and there are very capable people in this country.
And you go on to say that it's a mean life, and ultimately the voters go with somebody with a big smile and not much of a brain. And it occurred to me that you might have been talking about Jimmy Carter, big smile. And you know what? Joe Biden, you're ahead of the curve because, he does have that big smile. And I know that you're not too impressed with his intellectual ability.
Well, he was never known as a genius. He was never known as a particularly smart person. But now it's not prime time for him. And we need prime time. You know, President Xi, who I know, and head of China, if you look at Putin, if you look at Kim Jong-un, look what happened. Nothing happened in North Korea. It was supposed to end up in a war. We would have had a war in North Korea under President, frankly, Obama/Biden. When I met with President Obama, he said it's the single biggest problem we have, North Korea. I have a great relationship with him. We didn't have a war, and that would have been a nuclear nightmare. So it would have been a bad one. But I got along great with him and got along great with others. But at the same time, we took in billions and billions of dollars from China. I stopped the Russian pipeline, which is the biggest thing they had, and nothing even close, and I stopped it, and then Biden allowed it to go through. Nobody's been tougher on Russia, and yet I got along great with Putin. I got along great with him. It's a smart thing. You know, getting along is a good thing, especially when you look at the kind of weaponry we all have. Getting along is a great thing. But I stopped the pipeline, and he started it. And there can be nothing tougher than that. I mean, what I've done with Russia, what I did with China, I got along. Now, with China, once the China virus came out, once COVID came out, you know, I viewed the whole thing differently, to be honest. But we made an incredible trade deal. That's why our farmers are doing so well and manufacturers, because of the China deal I made, the China trade deal. But I don't talk about it, because once COVID came out, you know, I felt a lot differently about the trade deal with China. You understand?
Sure. Finally, Mr. President, I do believe the world would be a very different place if you were still in office, and because Joe Biden is not going to, and he's not qualified, he doesn't have the experience to make phone calls like you did to Mullah Abdul Baradar, I think his name is, and you summarized this a couple of weeks ago in Phoenix.
I started off the conversation. I said, Mohammed, how are you? President Trump. Hurrah! Not a lot of social grace, but, you know, that was a nice, he was being nice. I think he was being as nice as he could be, Andy. But they're rough, you know, he's a rough, that's all they do is fight. But I said, we're going to come back and hit you harder than any country has ever been hit. And your village, where I know you are, and where you have everybody, that's going to be the point at which the first bombs drop. I told him that. I told him.
Mr. President, I think only you. And that's a fantastic thing, quite frankly. I don't think anybody could work, pick up the phone himself, and communicate as effectively for America as you did in that phone call.
Well, I had an understanding with President Xi of China, also having to do with Taiwan. I said, do not let it happen. Do not. And it wasn't going to happen. As soon as they had this rigged election and the results came out, now you have bombers flying over Taiwan, a lot of them, a lot of them. And something could very well happen there, which would never have happened. And you look at inflation, take a look on a different, look at what's going on with inflation. Look at what's going on with these bills are going to drive this country out of business. What's happening is so terrible. Gasoline was at $1.87 a gallon, and now it's going to soon be over $5, and we're no longer energy independent. I was so proud of energy independence. Well, first time in, I think, in the country's history that we were in energy. Some people say 80 years, but I think in the country's history, we're totally energy independent, and now we aren't anymore. And he's going to see OPEC to see if they could get more oil to the United States. Can you believe this? Yes. We had so much. I filled up the strategic reserves with very inexpensive oil. Which were, by the way, close to empty. So it's a very sad thing. I mean, I could go on forever.
Sure.
I could tell you all of these different things that we did. But it's very sad when I see what's happening in Afghanistan, what's happening on the border, what's happening with inflation. It's a very much different country than it was 8 months ago.
You're going to be at the rally in Alabama on Saturday night. Newsmax will be covering it as we say goodnight, sir. Thoughts on 2024 and you? What are you thinking right now?
So, look, I love this country. I hate what's happening to it. I hate it. And we're not going to have a country anymore if it keeps going like this. We're a laughing stock all over the world. And I think a lot of people are going to be very happy.
Mr. President, President Donald Trump, thank you so much for joining us here. And to be continued,
thank you very much, Greg. Thank you.
You take care. Thank you. We'll be right back. All right. You've seen these images from Afghanistan. Chaos over there. Still, we've seen some images. This is from a couple of days ago, but I just saw something from tonight. And so chaotic, especially around the airfield. It did not have to be this way, of course. In fact, the Trump administration negotiated a deal that could have avoided all of this. Yes, it could have. Mark Meadows, former White House chief of staff. He is the senior partner at the Conservative Partnership Institute, also a veteran of Congress. Mark Meadows, welcome back to Newsmax. First off, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great. Unfortunately, the people in Afghanistan and the United States citizens are in harm's way can't say the same. And I want to say thank you for really trying to get to the bottom of not only the deal and what could have been avoided, but really the truth of the matter. And a great interview with the president. Obviously, you know, when you see his passion for these people, had they just followed the playbook we left them on January 20th, this wouldn't have been happening.
So tell us a little bit about that playbook. You had the negotiated agreement signed all the way back in February of 2020. It, for the most part, said to the Taliban, don't mess with the United States. But there were some negotiated understandings about weapons, about a transitional government that also could have prevented this situation.
Well, it could have prevented this situation because basically what we were telling them, and those discussions continued on with Robert O'Brien, Secretary Pompeo, and others, as we started to look at it, we said, you know, you need to negotiate in good faith with the Afghan government, make sure that there's a transition to power. We plan to withdraw our troops. There was not a date certain. The president was very clear on that, not to make a date certain, but also to say, based on these conditions, we're willing to withdraw and actually fulfill a campaign promise that the president wanted to fulfill, but it was conditioned, and it was also conditioned on one other thing with the president. He says there shouldn't be not one tent left. We don't want Taliban driving around in U.S.-made Humvees. We certainly don't want weapons to fall in the wrong hands, and sadly, that's exactly what has happened.
So in we saw Mark Milley and the Secretary of Defense tonight. They both look rather frazzled, and they didn't have a lot of answers. Do you think what you know of government, what you know of the Biden administration, is someone going to lose their job? Because it sure looks like someone deserves to lose their job.
Well, somebody will lose their job. Candidly, there will be some type of scapegoat. The problem is that the intelligence community certainly provided the sound intelligence of what was going to happen on the ground. And it was either Chairman Milley and Secretary Austin or the president himself that made the wrong play call here. Perhaps, you know, you're showing Chairman Milley there. Perhaps if he spent less time giving private conversations with book writers and reporters and focusing more on his job, we wouldn't have the debacle that we're having over there right now.
It is amazing, actually. Yes, some of these books from the fake news, by the way, they're full of mistakes, lies about the administration, key omissions. But one thing does come through. Milley spent a lot of time with these folks and giving him his version of what he told the president. According to Mark Milley, he was telling the president, you know, who's boss? Oh, no, you wouldn't understand, Mr. President. Tell us the dynamic between those two and you, if you don't mind. What was he like in that environment in the White House when you were working with him?
Listen, I got to interact with Chairman Milley on a regular basis. He was there to give sound military advice. The real problem that I have right now is the kind of revisionist kind of history he's trying to write and puff out his chest like he was this bad guy. He does have four stars on his shoulder, and certainly he served our country in an honorable way. But the way that he conducted himself as he was leaving the Trump White House, and to suggest that he was the moral compass in those rooms, it just didn't happen. He was more like a pussycat than a tiger.
It's something else. So Joe Biden seems to be desperately hanging on. I don't know if he walked off tonight he had a COVID presser. Nobody's thinking about COVID right now. I mean, they are, but it's not the hot topic of the moment. He walked off without taking any questions. If you were chief of staff for Joe Biden, I know that's not going to happen, but what would your advice be right now in handling this situation?
Well, one is to continue to give up, do exaggerated concern is what I would say, is basically give regular pressers on a regular basis. Don't be alone there. Have your advisors in. Make sure they're all coming in. And then bring the American people into it. Make sure that the press is there. Answer questions, even the tough questions. That's what Donald Trump always did. You know, a lot of the fake news media wanted to actually criticize him. But I can tell you this. He was always willing to take the tough questions, even on the toughest days. And so they need to really come clean. They need to actually work with Senator Cotton and others and make sure that we get the American citizens that are in harm's way safely home to America.
Mark Meadows, former White House Chief of Staff to President Trump, senior partner at the Conservative Partnership Institute and veteran member of Congress. Thank you, sir, very much. To be continued.
Great to be with you, Greg. Take care.
All right. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
were clear-eyed about the risks. We planned for every contingency, but I always promised the American people that I would be straight with you. The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated.
A couple of problems potentially with that statement big time. I'd like to bring in John Solomon, award-winning investigative journalist, founder of Just the News, Washington. First of all, welcome. How are you, John?
It's good to be with you. And so, congrats on the Trump interview. That's big.
Yeah, hey, imagine that, huh? So, look, is he telling the truth or not? I don't see how he could have planned for every contingency if he didn't plan for this. And there seems to be a lot of intelligence out there that suggested, yes, it could topple very, very, very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, there's a contradiction in what he said. When he said that, there was a contradiction. We planned for every contingency, but we didn't see this coming. Well, then you didn't plan for every contingency. There's been a lot of doublespeak on Afghanistan for a long time. And I dug in. When this unfolded over the weekend, the first question you want to ask yourself is, what did the president know? When did he know it? That's a question that every journalist should dig into. We interviewed a dozen intelligence officials who said, listen, all through June and July, the situation was deteriorating, and it became more and more clear the Afghan army was not up to the task and could not hold the line even for a few weeks. So they saw this unfolding. And I said, well, a lot of this is classified. What can I point to in the public domain? He said, well, look at these reports. We went to the inspector general for the special inspector general for Afghanistan reconstruction, the chief U.S. watchdog in Afghanistan. And sure as heck, in June and July, he issued a series of reports warning that the Afghan military's readiness capabilities were in dire straits, that this was not a fighting force. It was a army that had a glass chin. And how weak was it? How were the warnings? There's one report where they say these guys can't even refuel their vehicles. They lose half of the fuel every week. And if you can't put fuel into a tank or an armored car, you can't use it in the battle of war. That's how bad the Afghan army was. And yet on July 8th, President Trump stood up, despite these warnings behind the scenes, and said, I have every confidence that the Afghan army is up to the task of fighting the Taliban. At that moment, the U.S. government did not believe those words.
When President Biden in June said that.
July. Yeah, it was July 8th.
July. By the way, you know Washington very, very well. I want to play, this is 10-year-old sound from a general who was in charge, I believe, at the time of training the Afghan military. This is General Caldwell, who seems at the time, 10 years ago, to be very impressed with their progress.
We've made tremendous strides, incredible progress in the last 20 months. As I've watched this mission unfold from when we first stood up the NATO training command, as you well know, we fielded over 100,000 new police and army soldiers. They're probably the best trained, the best equipped, and the best led of any forces we've developed yet inside of Afghanistan.
So, I served in the military for a long time. I love the military, but I've seen this, sir, yes, sir, we can do, sir, more with less. So class is always half full kind of attitude, which is encouraged. But sometimes it can lead to overly glossy assessments that have no relation to reality. And I think it might be time for a real cultural reevaluation of that kind of attitude. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, listen, the inspector general who studied this for 10 years wrote more than two dozen reports saying what the military officers are saying and the reality in the Afghan ranks are completely different. The U.S. military has a false confidence in what they built. They're giving people a lot of credit where the actual facts on the ground show these guys can't do what they can do. And one of the concerns repeatedly flagged was that The U.S. military thinks that once they get an Afghan army going, they're going to just follow the rules of the American military command structure. What they learned time and again, and what Sopko and other people pointed out to the military, these guys had a much larger allegiance to their tribes than to the military command. They'll vote if the tribe says, come home. They didn't have that allegiance. There was a large amount of defections reported. Soldiers would come to the United States and they'd go, they'd bring an Afghan soldier here. He'd disappear. They knew this was a problem, and they put a lot of lipstick on a pretty difficult pig.
John Solomon, founder of Just the News. Check it out, and continued success, John, and to be continued.
Thanks, Greg.
You bet.
Appreciate it.
We'll be right back. Thank you for joining us, and a special thanks to President Trump. We'll see you tomorrow night. Stand by for Cinchfield, please.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.